Good afternoon, and welcome to Ask the Mayor. I'm WFIU News Director Will Murphy, and in the studio with us this afternoon, Bloomington Mayor Mark Cruzan, here to answer questions about city issues of concern to you. If you'd like to join the discussion with a comment or question, the number toll-free outside the Bloomington area is 877-285-9348. In Bloomington, the number is 855-0811. And if you'd like to drop a comment or question via email, the address is mayor@indiana.edu. Once again, the phone number toll-free outside of Bloomington, 877-285-9348. In Bloomington, 855-0811. And the email address is mayor@indiana.edu. Welcome.
Greetings. Thank you.
Nice to have you here.
The calm before the storm as we prepare for the students' return.
Yeah, it happens every year, but somehow it's never enough to brace yourself for the return.
It's not, especially if you work for parking enforcement.
Let's start off. We'll get to that in the course of this program. But first of all, let's talk about the weather and water. Up north in Indianapolis, the city has found it necessary to ask residents to voluntarily not water their lawns until there's some relief in sight. What's the prognosis for the situation in Bloomington?
We don't have that problem, and it's not that it's impossible to happen. If we were to have another long stretch of no rain and high temperatures, we could get to the point where we reach capacity. And if that were to happen, you'd see us talking about conservation methods. But we also have some water in reserve. Wouldn't be high quality. And people will notice that it's a good topic to bring up because one thing people are noticing and is happening to us is the taste of the water is not at the quality it normally is. It is completely safe and it is tested regularly and all of that's available for public review at any time. But because of algae growth in Monroe and because of our then response in treating it, there is a different, I think, a distinct taste to the water. Again, it is entirely safe. In terms of quantity, we can reach peak days. And right now, we're rated at treating up to 24 million gallons per day of water. And if we reach extreme drought and for an extended period of time, we could get to that point. But right now we're in the midst of proposing, and that's something that people have been seeing and hearing about, a plan to build some redundancy in our system and to increase the capacity that we can treat. And that would take us up to 30 million gallons per day capacity and at a cost to ratepayers. And it will be over a couple of rate period, a couple of years that we will try to do the increase. It's overall a 44% rate increase. The goal is to make sure that we never reach that peak day so that we don't end up where Indianapolis is now, that we always have water for fire suppression, for water supply, but also for just our long-term economic vitality to make sure that companies that are trying to locate here, especially those that may have a life science is bent to them that may have higher water demands are able to provide, that we're able to provide. So we're looking at going to 30 million gallons per day. That would take us through the year 2025 and beyond, probably closer to 2027, and enable us to have a little bit more redundancy in our line out of Lake Monroe. So that is the long-term plan. And we think it will provide for the future of the city and never get us to the point where they are in other parts of the state and the country.
Okay. Does this weather and the situation in Indianapolis revive any discussion among Bert Servais and folks like that to suck the water out from under us?
Excellent question. And I think we haven't heard it, but that is another reason that we are looking to do this is that in addition to increasing our capacity from 24 million gallons a day to 30 million gallons a day, we're also going to be going to the state and asking for that many more gallons per day rights, if you will, water rights out of Lake Monroe. So we're trying to plan for the future and make sure that we're in line and keeping ahead of the game when it comes to any kind of request like that. So that the easy answer and the accurate answer for today is no, there's not been an open discussion of that. But I think the more complicated answer and the one we should be cautious of is just because it's not being talked about again right now doesn't mean that it won't be if we continue to see the kind of things and the kind of growth that they're experiencing in the donut counties around Marion County. You can see that water demand will continue. They are looking at other sources as well, White River and other places that that I think that they will end up tapping to supply water for their communities, not just Indianapolis, but the area. So I want us to make sure we're planning ahead to stave off any kind of effort that might come up in the future.
Does this reconstruction effort to expand duplication of the city's water supply and expand its capacity involve some construction that will involve any kind of interruption of service?
That's an excellent question, Will, and I don't know the answer off the top of my head. I don't believe that it will, other than perhaps at one point. And we do have a certain number of a tremendous number of gallons in reserve. I don't know if there'll be that one point where the two lines do come together. The new line will tap into the existing line, and it's an excellent question that I will educate myself on and we'll talk about next month or sooner if you want me to give you the information.
Okay. We're talking with Bloomington Mayor Mark Cruzan. If you'd like to join us with a comment or question, 877-285-9348 or in Bloomington, 855-0811. Just this past weekend, the comment period on the post office survey was concluded. And what sort of presentation, if any, did the city submit to the post office in terms of keeping a facility downtown?
Well, I believe we've got a little bit more time to I'm trying to see if I have my notes. I don't have it in my notes, but I believe we've got a few more days for the public comment period to go. We've been communicating with the Postal Service pretty much on a regular basis for the last 2 years, more than 2 years. And as well as when I first came into office, we were communicating with the church that owns the property where the current post office is. And after a while, it became clear. And I think the board of the church was very deliberative and had decided it absolutely would not renew that lease when it expires in 2009. So we've started to move toward looking at other properties. The Postal Service they follow a federal law. They follow pretty precise procedures as to what they will discuss and when they will discuss it. But they know, and we've gone through a number of properties with them to show what kind of things might work. The city is working with them on a couple of specifics, but they will. They've got some issues in terms of cost. They obviously have issues in terms of space, and the number of acres they've looked at is just about 5 acres. I think it's 4.6 or 7. And that starts to limit the number of available sites in the downtown area. So we've already gotten to them, and we'll continue to get to them. Some sites, some suggested plans of action, some alternatives to the things they're looking at that we think would require less than that 5 acres that they're looking for and still satisfy their need. And it's important to keep that facility, especially a retail component in the downtown, for all of the new residents that are coming into the area, for all the businesses that are there. I think just for the identity of a community to have a post office downtown is important. The Postal Service agrees with all of that. For them, it will come down to bottom line and serving their customers best. And I think we can make a pretty compelling case that there are properties that will work that might not be on their radar screen right now. They have asked us for specific information on a few sites, and we're getting them that over the last year or so. We've put them in touch with developers, and developers have come to us, and property owners who are willing sellers have come forward, and we've shared all that information back and forth. The Postal Service doesn't like to at least specifically comment on a particular parcel because they wait until the bid process has been completed. So I think there are some properties they've already said have decided they would never do, and there are some that they're very interested in, and there are a couple I think they'd be interested in that the community might not be interested in. So we'll have to flesh all that out, and I'm pretty confident we'll be able to identify a parcel that will meet the needs of the community and the Postal Service. If it didn't, if they were to move on, that they're looking also southwest of town. There's an awful lot of lesser expensive property that I still would object to just because it's so far away from downtown. It may as well be, you know, anywhere. At some point, it's so far beyond the downtown area that it wouldn't much matter. So our goal is to keep it as close to the core of downtown as possible. And even if the first round don't find something, we'll push pretty hard to keep the negotiations open and maybe redefine what it is they're looking for. I'm not sure that 5 acres is a necessity.
Let me ask at the city at the hearing or the presentation by the Postal Service before the council, a number of people, including a postal worker or two, hammered on the city a little bit for not being more proactive in finding a site. I think one of them referenced the Mace supermarket site. Somebody might have referenced the Honda site on 11th Street. What's your take on that? Is it a fair assessment?
Well, I don't know. I'm not sure what specifically you're talking about, Will. But if that was said, it would be someone who didn't know that all this has already been done. And those sites in particular, more so the 11th and Morton site, there have been, again, over the past years, property owners / developers who have been put in touch with the Postal Service and vice versa. So the fact that they don't know about it doesn't mean it didn't happen. And in particular, Eric Eady, who's the developer who owns the – he's out of Atlanta who owns the 11th and Morton and, in fact, has increased that size. It's not just the Stevens Olds Honda site anymore that he owns. He actually extended it an acre and a half. So he's got about 8 acres out there. So that's still been talked about. There are other sites that I don't think the property owners would be particularly happy to have announced over the radio that they have been talking to the Postal Service. But there has been a lot going on, and the Postal Service has been in our office going back to Larry Jacobs when he was postmaster and now Jim Mennell as postmaster. And again, going back 3 years ago when it was with the Postal Service, the church board, Councilmember Steve Volan. That meeting had to have been at least 3 years ago, and we've continued to have meetings throughout. So there have been an awful lot going on. The Postal Service has to follow, it says, a specific format for how they can pursue properties. So a lot of this hasn't been done in some kind of a public way that any kind of announcements can be made. But we're getting to that point because after the public comment period is closed, they have – I believe it's 30 days that they accept all the bids. And from there, we'll be able to start talking very specific sites.
Okay. We have a caller on the line, and I thank him very much for holding on while we talked about the post office. We have Steve. Steve?
Yes, Mayor Cruzan. I'm concerned about the proposed swap of the Butler Park Fairview mm-hmm. School. And I live in the neighborhood. I walk my dog in Butler Park twice a day. I know that there's tremendous community feeling. I've talked with lots and lots of people that I share that people do not want to lose the park or most of the park. And, you know, that with regards to the issue of the school possibly being in danger of being taken over by the federal government because of the No Child Left Behind thing, it looks to all of us like the districting that put a huge number of poor kids into the Fairview School is more the problem than anything else. And simply moving the school a few blocks and renaming it is not the best way to handle that problem.
Well, I would agree with that, the last part especially. In my mind, should play literally, and I can't exaggerate this, literally 0% of the decision. Because even if – and first of all, I don't believe that's the motivation for the, what the school system is thinking about doing. But even if it was what they were looking at doing, once they move, that doesn't solve the problems. You can solve it, you know, as a light switch for that 1 second where it's got a new name and can start with new standards. But if other things haven't improved and the conditions in which the teachers and staff finds itself haven't improved, you end up just replicating the same thing with a new name. And I'm not sure that test scores and all really benefit all that much. So I don't believe that's their motivation. It certainly would be an awfully extreme measure to take. There are other schools and other parts of our system and other parts of the state, and I just can't believe that the solution long run would be in the long run for all of the schools would be to start just moving and I think it's about the condition and age of the facility, and they have a decision to make as to where they're going to go. So if it were simply a matter of trying to comply with federal guidelines, I think this would just be a horrible idea. If it's about the new facility and it's just part of their capital campaign, an ongoing capital renovations, what they approached us was to say that if we go and build a new school, is this something, as Fairview, the existing building, something you'd be interested in operating? Their other consideration has been that they would build someplace else, and the someplace else could include, and I want to stress that it's just something that was out there that I know that they – North Park at the corner of off of 46 and 37 is interested in having the school system build out there. There's some talk that it could go out near Arlington and sort of have like a build system like you've got at Binford and Rogers and have two schools at the Arlington area. In either instance, I think that would be a tremendous loss to the neighborhood and to the community to have a neighborhood school move out of that area. The debate then would be, should it be and a part – and I appreciated the way you phrased that. You're right that it would be part of Butler Park. That doesn't make it any less offensive to some, but it would be part of – there'd be at least 3 acres, perhaps 4 acres of green space that would remain along with public accessibility to the new school as a community center. And then what would happen to – or should the existing Fairview be torn down or added on to, retrofitted? And that's a decision that the school board will have to make. The city is simply waiting to see what the school board decides. If it is going to move forward, we are willing to look at taking Fairview and turning it into a community center. But I will say I have heard from people who are concerned about the Butler Park, some people still refer to as 9th Street Park, being built on at all, and I value that input an awful lot. And one of the best examples that was given to me was if you were talking about building on Bryan Park, there would be an uproar. Would you do that? And I think that's an extremely valid question. And that's why we had asked, and the school system was very anxious to have a lot of public input opportunity. I don't have those schedules in front of me. The school system, though, you can contact. I believe they're on their website as well. Or you can call my office at 349-3406. They are coming up, I believe, in the next couple of weeks, and there will be a number of public input sessions, not just over at their school system. I think they deserve an awful lot of credit for planning to do these community input sessions in the community. So they'll be held over in your neighborhood so that people don't feel like they aren't welcome to come and express their feelings. So I greatly appreciate your call and want you to know that no decision has been made at all.
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate your call.
Yes, thank you.
Boy, he sure talked a lot, didn't he? Barely let you get a word in edgewise there, Mayor. We have another email here that we'll
I can give a lot less complete answers if you'd like. I thought this was WFIU and it was a show that you're supposed to have a lot of thoughtful comment, but I can resist. I'll just give yes-no answers.
It's also an avenue for folks to have their say as well, and it's nice that you provided a thorough answer. This email question says, "Hi, we live on Fess Avenue, about 4 blocks south of the new IU parking structure on Atwater and Fess. We understand there will be more than 600 spaces available when construction, if done, and that the main entrance will be on Fess Avenue. We're concerned about the possibility of substantial increase in traffic throughout the residential streets south of the garage. Is the city working on a plan to address new traffic patterns and pressures caused by the new facility?"
Yes, especially going to the south on Fess. The neighborhood had contacted us with concern about that, and we are going to put up some dividers in the middle of Atwater there at Fest so that people will not be able to cross going across Atwater on Fest going south. We're anticipating that there will be a lot greater traffic flow leaving that parking garage and headed toward the neighborhood. So we want to make sure that we don't end up with people using that as a shortcut, that they'll have to turn to the east on Atwater. The other direction, the other issue that I'm a little concerned about is pedestrian traffic. And I think we'll see a lot more people who park their cars in Atwater and then start to walk toward campus. And we're working with the architect and planner who gave us some advice on the third Atwater corridor to start looking at making that safer, probably removing some of those 15-minute parking spots that are on 3rd Street and putting in a pedestrian crossing to make that a lot safer. But we'll be looking at the timing of the lights and seeing what we can do to start to especially in the mornings when people come in and the evenings when people are leaving to accommodate that increased traffic.
Since we're talking about increased traffic and parking lots and whatnot, might as well now address this issue we spoke of at the beginning of the program, the return of students, staff, and faculty for the fall term. What kind of headaches does the city face as that process begins anew?
Well, especially for especially for parking enforcement, and I think that the neighbors who live around the core of campus start to see a lot more illegal parking in the neighborhood zones. We've now got a new zone on the near west side, Zone 10, and that will be new to the students too. They will be coming back and not – this will be something that's brand new to them that wasn't there last year. And I think what we'll see according to – when I talk to the parking enforcement people is people will adapt. And we've got this I think going down to Maple now near there. We'll see people go further west and park and wind up with a Zone 11. It's kind of an ongoing game we play, I guess. The goal really is going to be education when it comes to parking and also with noise, with the Lower the Boom campaign and trying to educate students that we are – you know, we're willing to educate up front, but long range, we are going to enforce. There will be fines for noise. There will be fines both with Quiet Nights and the Lower the Boom campaign, which is geared more toward car stereo, and with parking enforcement. We've beefed up our parking enforcement plans. The parking garage management will be different. We hope to accommodate more students in those garages, especially from the downtown apartment complexes. But ultimately, it will be a matter of educate up front and enforce in the long run. All of the staff of the city are incredibly talented at having figured out over the years how best to accommodate this influx of people hand when it has to do all the apartment inspections, the police department, fire department, obviously, in terms of public safety, tremendous impact on our park system. I think our streets department did a great job of getting almost all of our construction done during those summer months. There will be some disruption, but nowhere near what there would have been had they not gotten it done. So I think we're ready, and it'll mostly be a welcome thing. I think we all love living in Bloomington, where we've got a little bit of time for ourselves in the summer and around the holiday season, and then the economy really begins to thrive when the students come back.
For folks who may not have heard the program last month or heard your announcement earlier, could you just recap the Lower the Boom campaign? And it seems to me important to sort of underscore that people shouldn't expect to phone the police department and cops will be dispatched to the stereo radios out of cars as they pass by.
Good point. The Lower the Boom is being done through our Safe and Civil City program, Beverly Callender Anderson, director. And she has established a public information campaign, and we already are going to be handing out information to all the downtown apartment complexes, really almost all apartment complexes, about Quiet Night, about the Lower the Boom campaign. And you're right. That's a good point, is we don't want people – first of all, if you feel it's an ongoing problem, 911 is still the number to call if you're having noise complaints or party problems in your neighborhood. The mobile source of noise is a lot more complicated. Once you call the police, of course, that mobile source of noise is gone. What we're trying to do is take more of a preventive approach and educate people that that you really need to take into consideration the impact you're having on others. And if that doesn't work, that we will be enforcing. There will be a $50 fine, first offense, $100, and then up to $500 – not up to – $500 for a third offense in terms of this mobile noise problem. And we're going to start with a lot of warnings up front to get word of mouth out, because a lot of people don't know we're doing this. And then after that, it will be the actual tickets themselves. So we do encourage people to still call 911 if you feel you're having a problem that you think can be immediately solved. But we hope that the Lower the Boom campaign will start to educate people, just like Quiet Nights did. We don't ask people to not call 911, but we try to use Quiet Nights to educate people. The student government at IU has been incredible. IUSA, the dean's office, and others have been – IUPD, all of us have just been very proactive in helping get the word out in the past, and we believe that will be the case this year.
I'll remind our listeners that we're visiting with Bloomington Mayor Mark Cruzan. And if you have a comment or question, now is your occasion. We have about three more minutes. Number is 877-285-9348 and Bloomington 855-0811. And the email address is mayor@indiana.edu. And if we don't have time for your comment or question, then you can forward it to us and we'll pass it on to the mayor's office. We do have a caller on the line. Go ahead. Hello?
Hello. My name is Dave, and I have a question concerning the operation of the Planning and Zoning Department.
Mm-hmm.
It seems I've been watching them over the last couple of years, and it seems that they have a tendency to approve plans based on drawings that are given to them. And it seems that they're not really looking at the sites where the constructions or the zoning materials are going on. And then halfway through the project, they wind up actually going out and looking at it, and then there's always a problem with having to go before the Board of Zoning Appeals. So my question is, what can be done to make our Planning and Zoning Department a little bit more proactive instead of reactive?
And I'll remind the mayor that we have about a minute.
Okay. I don't believe that we Planning and zoning staff has just been incredible, and I know that they're out all the time doing the proactive work. But if there's a specific case that you want to email or call me about, it's mayor@bloomington.in.gov or 349-3406. We do have limited staff, and there's an awful lot of petitions that come in. I know they do go and do site visits. Sometimes I think they do start with the paperwork and look and see what's even doable or not to avoid doing work that doesn't need to be done. But I do know they go out and do things. So, but if there's a specific case, and it sounds like there might be, please feel free to let us know. I know they're incredibly responsive to planning, Tom Makuta and his staff, and I'll be happy to accommodate you. But thank you for bringing it to my attention.
All righty. We only have a couple more seconds here, but I did want to mention that we have this meeting coming up on the 20th about the B District.
Yes, Bloomington Entertainment and Arts District. We do invite the public to come in. We're beginning the planning process to establish a strategic plan for what BEAD can be. And when I look at the future of Bloomington, I look at BEAD, the Certified Technology Park, Certified Tech Park, and the Beeline Trail all coming together along with that new student population that's downtown, all the different businesses and residences that are being built downtown, and getting what people like to refer to as a synergy that will keep our downtown unique. So I encourage people to come to BEAD. You're going to see that it's a lot more than about the arts. It's about the economy. It's even about our parking garages. Our parking garages now will be branded based on the BEAD identification as to what district they're in. So there will be a lot happening there, and we invite people to come and participate in that process.
And that meeting is Monday, August 20th at 6 p.m. in the McCloskey Room. And with that, we're going to have to conclude today's program. It goes very quickly. We've been visiting with Bloomington Mayor Mark Cruzan. I'm Will Murphy. Hope you'll join us again next week on the 22nd, when our guest will be Kokomo Mayor Matt McKillop. On behalf of producer Catherine Hageman and engineer Mike Pashkash, I'm Will Murphy. Thanks for listening.